I'd argue that the trampoline you drew looks like spike ball.
I mean, the spike ball is a trampoline.
I mean, there's not like giant holes in the trampoline threads.
That's true. There's not giant holes in the spike ball thread either.
Yeah.
The ball just fall through.
Compared to a trampoline.
Listen, we're trying to make a fast version of this.
You can't defend that. Ah, the A was a party hat.
Yeah.
I just thought you drew an A for something.
No, it was supposed to be little strings. One of the things I really appreciated about your stick figures was you actually did a nice job of like having the person being chased is running. The person falling looks like they're falling. All my stick figures are just kind of like single direction. There's no bend to my stick figures because they're sticks. I will say your stick figure for Captured is blindfolded.
Yeah, it's blindfolded.
I don't know if you're going to post this on Instagram, but I can't tell. Are the bars bars or is it a bed?
They're bars.
It's a really different picture if it's a bed.
I mean, I don't know where most captured people end up, but because normally if you're in prison, you also don't have the blindfold on anymore, right? But it was prison.
Something went wrong in this captured picture. Post this on Instagram and you could say, caption this.
Oh, I don't think that's a good idea.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to the Misplay, where we bluff our opponent into crushing us. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason. I did that. I wasn't very good at it.
I really appreciate that our misplay for this week is from a game that you designed.
It's on brand. You make misplays in the games you design.
Did we make any misplays in designing this game?
Oh, we made plenty. We made plenty. We just talked about the art. We made plenty. But we weren't testing all of that.
That's true.
Where are we?
We built a playable prototype for your version of Nightmare Smashers.
We did.
We wrote the playtest protocol that we're going to try and work on. And then we playtested.
And I should add that we did all of that after meeting with the team for the second time. So we had our second meeting with the team. And during that meeting, we talked about my version of Nightmare Smashers. And together we created a simple set of rules.
You know, I asked you this last time when we tested Supermarket Game, how does it feel being a game designer now? You really downplayed game designer during Supermarket Game. It was really interesting and fun sitting down with Colacoma, Peter, Scott, and Brian and getting to try out the design cycle that we outlined on the last show.
The Mark Katz 7-step design protocol? Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it was cool to see in action because one, I think for me, I was actually pleasantly surprised that it kind of accomplishes the goal that we wanted it to. We were very efficient in that meeting and everyone came with really interesting ideas for how to develop. And like you said, we co-wrote the rule set so that when you and I walked away from that meeting, our next steps really were just plug in the cards that we were going to use as our test for this week. And I think following the meeting, the product, the game that kind of took shape was much more interesting than it would have been if you and I had just sat down and done it by ourselves.
100%. And, you know, this is episode 20. And I think for a long time, I just felt like the two of us were kind of just in our own little box over there. And we've come out of that box. And now we are involving other people around us and getting their input. And it's going to, and it is making a big difference.
So we're excited to share the results of playtest number one of Jason's Nightmare Smashers.
Before we do that, before we start, this week's episode is brought to you by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual is a YouTube channel welcoming people into the board game hobby with video reviews, recommendations, unboxings, tips for accessorizing on a budget, and more. And this week, Board Game Casual posted a design diary, a two-deck combat system idea. If you're listening to this podcast and going, okay, yeah, this sounds cool, I got good news for you. You can head over to Board Game Casual and see a video podcast outlining RJ's playtest protocol. Now, it's not the Mark Katz 7-step playtest protocol, but it's better. And it's a video, and it's cool to see everything in action. Find their videos at Board Game Casual on YouTube, at Board Game Casual channel.
You know, since we've come back from Gen Con, it feels like we have more direction in what we're doing here. What are we working on today?
Nightmare Smashers.
That was my version. Yours is the like upbeat fist in the air.
Oh yeah. It was
Nightmare Smashers.
Yeah. That's what we're working on. We were not trying to build the best game in the world right now. We were trying to test, quote mark, our systems using the Mark Katz 7 steps playtest protocol. That's what we were working on. And I think it's really important because that even came up in our meetings where when we were talking about the ideas and how the game would work, people had some really interesting ideas that I'd love to experiment with down the road. But for what we were trying to test, which was we get feedback, we play the game, we come back, we make changes, right? I don't know all the steps. There's 7 of them. That was the point. It wasn't trying to, you know, present this as the best game in the world, because you had said earlier when you were talking, you're like, you know, and I know in the beginning you didn't, you know, see yourself as a board game designer after a supermarket game. I still don't. There's no room I walk into right now to go, yeah, I'm a board game designer. Hi, my name is Jason. This is not happening. I'll say podcaster, but I won't say board game designer.
I really want to dig into that, but it feels really off topic.
Episode 21.
Okay, not board game designer, Jason. Tell us about your game.
So the game, yeah. The objective of Nightmare Smashers is to make your nightmares less scary. I think that's the simplest way to say it. On your turn, you flip over a nightmare and you don't reveal it. And it could be a T-Rex, it could be public speaking, it could be drowning. And then you play modifiers such as balloons or laugh track or a life jacket. And your opponent also has the opportunity to interact and increase the fear as you are trying to decrease the fear level. After playing all your cards, you add up all the modifier effects and adjust your fear score. We'll talk more about the game as we're talking about it. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was just really quickly the process of us building the game. So we spent about 90 minutes meeting with the team. And then afterwards, some people on the team and you and I created a list of, we had 15 nightmares. We had 30 modifiers and we put them into a Google Sheet. We created categories. And at first it was just like red, yellow, blue, but eventually they became creatures, motion, and anxiety. So it's like the 3 categories that we created for dreams. So for example, in the creatures, we had T-Rex, insect swarm, clown, ghost attack, Santa. He's a creature.
Santa can be scary.
And then what we did was we created modifier values. So backflip, for example, was a modifier. It helped. It reduced motion by 1 and increased your anxiety, because doing a backflip would increase my anxiety.
I mean, if you mess it up, you can break your neck.
Yeah. For the time being, though, Mark, you went in and you made these numbers on all the cards. It's random and it's not random, right? You had a system to make sure that they were like evenly distributed, but for the most part, they were just randomly assigned between what they were affecting, right?
Oh yeah, I didn't look at all at flavor.
Yeah. And then we made the fear cards and we just assigned them a value of 10, 9, or 8. You know, there were less 10s being like the tougher, the scarier dreams. And then we each started with 30 health. We made a basic template that we could print out all the cards on. And then Mark and I went in, hand drew, labeled, and sleeved the cards in a magic deck. So we did all of that in just about a little less than 2 hours.
I think I contest your, not to discredit the amazing work that Board Game Casual is doing and the production values that they achieve on their YouTube channel, but I don't think it's fair to say that this is not a prototype. I think there are different levels about it. And we talked about it when we were in Gen Con because you saw different levels of completion or readiness to see. Probably not this. We're not going to bring this to Gen Con in a world where they let us play in the playtest room.
Right.
But I don't think it's fair to say, I don't think it's fair to undersell the work that went into it, because these did serve the purpose of allowing us to do our first playtest. So it might not be a pretty prototype, but it is a prototype that served the function that we needed it to for this particular playtest.
Sure. Thanks, Mark. My Google Sheet skills are higher than my art skills. So going into this playtest, Mark, we had objectives, right? It wasn't just criticize the art. It was, we had like 3 points.
I think it's important to look at where we finished in our design process before we talk about what the playtest was. So at the end of our meeting, what we came away with is we had the rule set, we had how to play, we had the end state for the game, and our task was to make the cards that would be the first iteration of checking out, does everything work the way that we built it? And then we knew that just having some numbers on cards with the how to play that we designed isn't going to be especially compelling or interesting or the game that we would ultimately want it to be. And so at the end of the meeting, we were like, well, what are the things that we want to get out of a first playtest? Finding other features or mechanics that we wanted to bring into the game. Checking to see if we felt like the decisions that were in the game felt meaningful and interesting to us. And what decisions do we wish we could make?
That's right.
So how did we do? To get us started, why don't you share what you felt like were your top two impressions from the playtest that we did?
My first impression is the game worked. Exactly kind of as we drew it up, you know, with the team, that game worked. It functioned. The other impression, Mark, you know, I go all the way back to episode 1 or 2, because it felt like, and you said it while we were playing, it felt like we were playing a trick-taking game for tricksters. Like, the idea behind one of your original games was something along those lines. I know you would like collect or take the cards, but it felt like the bluffing in the game was like legitimate. It felt real.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I think it was Colacoma in the meeting that said, this feels like it could be the trick-taking game for tricksters if it weren't Nightmare Smashers. And I haven't been able to get that out of my head. It's really stuck in my brain now of, there is a world where we could take some of the work that we've done on your version of Nightmare Smashers and turn it into a trick-taking card game that has some of the elements that I was considering when I pitched that game originally.
And that was never what I had intended. Like when I pitched my original idea for this version of Nightmare Smashers, like the idea where you're playing stuff face down, like that was not my idea at all. So that came from the team meeting. So let's go back. Let's go to those three questions now. Let's start with the second one. Do I feel like I had meaningful decisions? You go.
I was pleasantly surprised that the decisions felt, one, meaningful, and two, more interesting than I originally thought they were going to be. We talked a lot about what we anticipated the level one to be of the game, where a nightmare comes up, you just play your biggest reducer, and everybody else kind of piles on you. That wound up not to really be the case.
Yeah, I would say in 5 out of the 6 times that I was putting down cards, I felt like I was really thinking about what you must have or what the nightmare must be that was face down. And there was only one turn where I was like, wow, I'm just playing these two cards no matter what. There's nothing else I can do. And there was just like, I'll just play the two highest ones because it doesn't matter.
There was also just some interesting math to be done. I actually played something that made my nightmare worse for me.
Yeah. And I read that as, that didn't matter. So you had pumped up motion. And so I had read, it's definitely not a motion nightmare. So I put down cards that increased or that had a -2 motion, thinking it just didn't matter. Then that one ended up being motion. That was sick.
Part of the reason why I made that play the way that I did was because of the rest of my hand. I didn't have cards that would have let me play in more of the level one way that we had imagined. And so it required a little bit of a different thinking in the way that turn was going to play.
And I think after that turn, when I started the next round, I put down my card and I said to you, it's all random now, Mark.
The other piece that kind of came up that I don't think we intentionally designed for when we met with the team for the design part of the meeting was cards had two modes. They had a mode where they weakened a nightmare and they had a mode where they strengthened a nightmare. And I think, at least in my original thinking, I was like, well, it affects, it's one or the other. It's never going to be both at the same time. And actually physically playing and seeing the way that it worked kind of informs the change that needs to happen where they are both at the same time.
I would say I was pleasantly surprised that even on this small, basic level, there were some meaningful choices to be made, and there were ways to bluff and trick each other. To do that and just, you know, these 30 cards was pretty cool.
Let's zoom back out then. We feel like there were some meaningful decisions to make. There were interesting decisions to make. There were a lot of decisions that we couldn't make or that didn't exist in this playtest. What kinds of decisions would you like to have seen included, or would you like to add to this game if we were to continue working on it?
You had asked me this question while we were playing, and the first one that I came up with is, I want to change that face-down nightmare on you. I wanted to be able to, you know, swap out the nightmare and not tell you what it is. That was the first thing that I wanted to do, because I was looking at my cards and I felt like on that particular turn that mine didn't really, I felt I knew what it was face down based on what you were doing. I ended up being wrong, but I felt like it would be great to change it because I think my cards don't affect what it is. I just wanted to swap out the nightmare on you. That was the first one.
I really wanted to have ways to get more information about what was face down. Either like some card that I could play that didn't affect the board that like let me peek at a card, or a way to say, I wanted more cards that weren't just numbers.
Right. And you had a couple of interesting ideas. For example, one was, you know, maybe you could block me from putting down a card. And I don't want to go into mechanics yet because that's the other question. But the point is decisions. And I think you had said it while we were playing that one of the things that you wanted to be able to do, and, you know, not going into mechanics yet because that's the other question, but the decisions, you wanted to make a decision to stop me from playing something. You wanted to, you know, like cancel one of my cards, or maybe force me to play my face down, face up. I thought those would be interesting decisions, like playing cards that didn't just have a modifier on it, like you were saying.
Yeah, that starts to get a little bit at a wider question of, do we get the decision to not play a card? And I didn't see it when I was looking back in the rules, but I think the consensus was from the team meeting that you play a card every turn or at every opportunity.
Yes.
So there were moments when I was thinking it would be nice to not have to, or have some kind of like card solution or a decision that you could make that mimicked not playing a card.
Or maybe even delaying playing both of your cards at the end after, make me play two.
That would be so
and
cool.
Then play both of your cards.
So I think we've started to blend a little bit, but we're in the spitballing realm of what other kinds of mechanics would we like to be present. And I think a lot of the things that you've mentioned, you know, messing with the turn order, swapping out nightmares, these are the kinds of things that could be on cards that make the game more dynamic and more interesting and not just a mix and match numbers game.
And so to get us back up to the first question, what other features and mechanics do we want in the game? You know, one of those for sure that I would like to see, I don't know if it would be in the next round, but I would like to have, you know, characters that have different abilities or skills. And maybe you have a character that, you know, once per whatever, right, they get to block someone else's card, or, you know, does the thing where, you know, they play their turn at the end and play them both face up. So I'd like to see characters, you know, and I can imagine like all these different types of people who are having nightmares, you know. You can have the person who's having those anxiety dreams or those, that person's like really afraid of the T-Rex.
Oh yeah, that would be kind of cool to have characters that are affected in specific ways by the nightmares or have like supplement to particular items. That'd be cool.
My son loves dinosaurs. He's the T-Rex in his dream. That would be amazing. Like he would love that. He's not affected by that one. You know, immune to T-Rex. T-Rex attacks everybody else.
So if adding like a character or a player card for players is kind of one of the things that you would want to bring to it, I think for me, the most broad mechanical space that I would want to look at again is kind of what ways can I get more information or what mechanics or cards can exist to allow us to have more information to play with, and two, non-modifier player cards that affect the current or future rounds.
Yeah, there needs to be something else that is going on. You know, like you had said, you know, instead of playing a card, can you affect the game in some other way that's interesting and also strategic? Because you don't want those turns where, you know, I only had one of them, but you don't want those turns where you're just like, these are the two cards in my hand that have the highest numbers, then I'm going to play them. So you want to be able to do other things, and it makes the game more interesting. And we're going to have to expand categories for sure. You can't just have the three categories. There's going to have to be more depth in the nightmares. But again, you're going to have more. Again, like I don't know if that's the next round, you know, the Marquette's playtest protocol, but there are like a lot of things we can do that could, if we wanted to keep moving with this, right? If we wanted to say that this is interesting, can we make it better? We'd have to figure out like what makes the most sense right now, because there's too many things. There's a lot of things that. It's funny because when I think about what this game could be, it could be nothing like what we're doing right now. You know, it could be completely different. And that's cool.
I agree. It definitely has me thinking more and more about different games or different possibilities. I am incredibly hung up on trick-taking game from Tricksters right now because I don't remember if I shared, I had a concept for characters in the game where, do you know the game Hearts?
Yeah.
So in the game Hearts, you pass three cards to a new player. And so I was envisioning this passing mechanic and having a trickster character that had like more control over how passing worked in the game. And like, so you're like adding like little pieces that are like, oh, this was a trick taking game for Tricksters thing. This was another one. I'm on a huge tangent, but I'm incredibly into trick taking game for Tricksters right now.
I don't know, maybe it falls into it. I was actually really happy in the meeting with how this came up was right now, how did you get your modifiers? You started each round with five of them. How did you get them?
We randomly dealt them.
We just dealt them out. And my point is like, at this point in the design, that's what you should be doing. It doesn't, like, you don't need an interesting way to get the cards to people right now. In the future, you do.
I didn't necessarily read the Marquette seven steps of playtesting to Jason today.
That's the first time I got Mark to call it that. That's great.
But I've been begrudgingly? I don't think begrudgingly. I've been leading him through it quietly. So what we've done so far is we've reviewed our notes and communications from the previous session. We identified the specific things that we were going to test. We outlined those in our objectives. We played through the game as written through the current version. We ran into a couple of things that we were like, we should change this right now. But it's really important to get like a consistent playthrough of the version that you're trying. So we played through as written. We took time while we were playing to take notes about what was happening. And what we've been doing for this show really is kind of the end of the playtest session. We've been debriefing about the playtest. And then we're going to generate ideas about what either needs adjustment or what worked and didn't work, or ideas or problems to solve that arose that we want to address in the next cycle of design.
Is this step six or seven?
This would be step six.
Okay.
And then what the last step would be, step seven, is we're going to summarize our notes and recommendations. So when we come back and start step one of design, we have something to reference to inform what we want to be working on during the next design cycle.
Yeah. So if I was summarizing and saying, this is the most important thing to work on, I go back to meaningful decisions. How can we make our choices more interesting? How can we make our choices feel like this is strategic, what I'm choosing to do? I'm not yet worried about, you know, adding in, you know, more categories of nightmares or cooler modifiers, or have the modifiers work a little bit differently. I'm trying to wonder if there is a path within this game that with the basic set of rules that we have, that is going to be interesting for people to play. Because, you know, the thing we haven't talked about, Mark, is like, what does the audience want? Like right now, the audience is just you and me, right? And we've just been testing like this design protocol. But if I'm going to go any further with it, I'd want to understand what people are going to want from this game.
If that's where you think the game needs to go next, or like what the game needs next, it sounds like what you're proposing is asking outside people to play the game and then give feedback on the version that we played today. Make no changes and see what other people think of having played through this basic version.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what I would like to... I'd like to hear what other people think about the game.
I think if we were just workshopping this internally, just in our little box, if we put ourselves back into our box that you talked about earlier, for me, I would want to have the cards that manipulate play in other ways before I would think about having other people play it. I think I would want to have more, I would want to have the more categories. I would want to have more of the cards that do different things that aren't just modifiers. And I'd really want to like play test that internally for a little while and come to a conclusion of here are the mechanics, here are the non-modifier things that we want to be able to do. Here are the characters that you could play. And I think once you have your characters, you have an expanded range of categories, and you have the non-modifier types of cards that you can play with, then I think you have an interesting game that can be, that we could play test with other people and then start to get real feedback about how compelling a game it is.
Yeah. And as I'm hearing that, I can see how doing the things that you just outlined would create opportunities for more meaningful decisions, which was at the heart of what I was trying to say was my number one thing. So I could see that. I could see that as being totally valid.
Of course, that's all incredibly hypothetical. We're not necessarily going to go through another cycle of design and playtest and putting cards together, changing the prototype. But like that's the way that our design process and our playtest process, that's the way we want them to relate to each other. We do our design process, we do our playtest process, and then we go back and you just build a larger loop. And I think even if we don't talk about it again, I think it would be worth doing the one more link in the chain of go back, do another design cycle for this, and whether we playtest it or not, just to get more of the loop of what the process will be like, I think it would be beneficial to do one more step along this particular game.
And maybe that ends up on Patreon. Maybe that ends up on a newsletter. It might not be something we come back to on the show. What is next?
You beat me to it. I was like, Jason's really begging the question. Can I sneak in what's next so that I don't have to answer? Because I don't know.
Yeah, I asked the question. I mean, this could be the first show where we go, we're not sure. We're going to figure that out at the next team meeting on Wednesday. I think saying right now, I don't know, is valid. Because it is. Anything we say right now, we're literally just making up. Right? What's next? Oh, we have this really great idea to do this thing. Behind the scenes, Peter has been testing his version of Nightmare Smashers. So a few people got to play it last week. So Peter's working on his version of Nightmare Smashers. So, I mean, I think it's okay to say, we're not sure yet. We have different ideas. We got Trick-Taking Game for Tricksters. You've got Peter's Nightmare Smashers. You have your version of Nightmare Smashers. We have the one that we prototyped and playtest for mine. Supermarket Game. Still, people are like, wow, that game's amazing.
Did you ever, have you touched it since we played it?
Oh, no, I think I recycled it. That's a misplay.
It kind of feels like what's next is, it's going to be back to the drawing board in some format, right? So it's either going to be working on and iterating and changing something that's already pre-existing, or it's going to be developing and continuing something that we've already started working on. What's next?
I mean, I think it's a great teaser. I think people are going to be like, wow, they could come back with anything.
What's next?
You can't keep asking that. The answer hasn't changed.
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Adjos, Brian, Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at patreon.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our FAQ in Discord.
Do you want a different what's next?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't think so. I think it's fine to leave it at we don't know.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness, we don't.
Incredibly on brand.
Right? It is on brand. I mean, telling the story authentically.
Is that part of the mission statement?
I was just kidding. Ah, you beat me to it. You beat me to it. Let me check. Our mission is to create a thoughtful and engaging podcast that fosters learning through storytelling and development of board games. We strive to inspire kindness and creativity in every step of our journey. No, it's not being authentic.
We're disingenuous.
I mean, it's up to interpretation.